Hello and welcome to the Untitled Leisure Project. My name is Daniel Varghese. I am your host. On today's show, we talk about Bon Iver's new album, 22, a Million. Then address the band and its lead singer Justin Vernon's larger body of work. Like Vernon in the new album, we will ask a lot of questions, but hopefully we'll have some more answers. Before we get into it, allow me to welcome our esteemed panel of critics to the pod. First, Mike Bergen, leisure editor of The Voice. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Daniel.
Next, making her podcast debut, assistant leisure editor and author of our review of the new album, Caitlin Mannering. Hey, Caitlin.
Hey, everybody.
And finally, also making his voice podcast and a leisure topic debut, news staff writer, Michael Coyne.
Hello, Daniel. Good to be here.
Hey, Michael. So frequent listeners of The Voice podcast might notice that we have a proclivity towards having people on with similar names. Usually this is me and Danielle. Danielle and Daniel sound very similar when you say them a lot. Today is no different, as we have two people named Michael. So in order to kind of clear things up as best as possible, I'm going to be referring to Michael Bergen as Mike and Michael Coyne as Michael. Is that okay with everyone?
Yes, works with me.
Great. Awesome. Today, we will be starting our conversation, though, with Caitlin, as Caitlin is the one writing the album review. So, Caitlin, can we have some of your general thoughts about the album and what you're going to say in the piece?
Sure. I think, first off, what sticks out to me is the stark contrast to his other albums. Mm-hmm. This album almost has a complete lack of any type of normal structure you would see in an album. A lot of the songs don't really have any typical verses or refrains. Mm-hmm. And I think it's almost chaotic in a way, but I think it's almost refreshing compared to a lot of the music coming out today in folk genre.
Okay. Michael, what do you think?
I think it's a really interesting evolution of the sound of Bon Iver, not to get into his past work too much, but I think you can really see the evolution in the sound of the band from Forever, Forever Ago to the self-titled Bon Iver second album, and now to the third album, 22 a Million. You have a lot. It's become, over time, it's gone from very acoustic, very bare bones to more effects laden, and at this point, it's very, very abstract music, which is cool, and it's definitely an evolution that you can see through their discography so far.
What about you, Mike?
Yeah, I'm impressed with this album. The first listen, I did not like it very much. I blame that kind of on confusion a little bit, but then I kind of embraced it. I'm like, yeah, this is supposed to be confusing, and in a good way. I think I agree with what our other panel critics have said about the lyrical quality and the musical advancement, and I see kind of the direction. There's a particular song called Woods that we can get into later, and I see that how they've kind of followed a trajectory, and I think it's made them a lot more interesting as a diverse artist in a way, I guess, if that's the right term for it. I think it's really cool as just something new and hard to describe in a good way.
Yeah, I also agree with both of you in that, like, this is very, very different than anything we've seen from Bon Iver, except for maybe his work with Kanye West. Like, you mentioned the song Woods, which is from one of his other works, but
it's from the self-titled.
Yeah, and that song was, like, turned into a Kanye West song called, like, Lost in the Woods.
Yeah.
And that song is, like, very sample vocally, like, using the, I don't know what the instrument is, but
it's just, like, I think it's just, like, as the
It's a different kind of
autotune. Prismer or something like that?
Yeah,
which is vocoder?
Yeah, the vocoder, yeah, that's exactly what it is. And using that to create just very interesting melodies and then layers and layers and layers. And that's something that we've seen him do and is very compelling that he does. But in this album, he does it very differently. It's not as melodic all the time. This album's definitely, like, extremely beautiful. Mm-hmm. There's just amazing vocal and melodic moments here. But like Caitlin said, there aren't really traditional verses or choruses in a lot of these things. It's just, like, music.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Can you talk a little bit more about that and just the sense, the, like, lack of structure here?
Mm-hmm.
And what it does and how that, like, advances the music, I guess, and why that makes this compelling.
Okay, sure. Going off from what you guys said about the song Woods, I think his song in this album, 715 Creeks, is very similar to that.
Right.
Because this song almost lacks any instrumentation.
Right.
It's basically just his voice in autotune, like, on an almost, like, eerie loop, I would say. I think also the song 21 Moon Water.
21 Moon Diamond Diamond and Diamond Diamond and Water.
All caps. it's almost abrasive at the end. I felt it's, I don't even know what that is at the end, what you would call that. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like ringing, like, or something.
Like dissonant?
Yes, yes, exactly. I think the bridge kind of between his old albums and this one is the song Eight Circle, because I would say that's where his voice is like the least manipulated.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, definitely.
I would agree with a lot of what you just said, Caitlin. I think Eight Circle is definitely his most traditional song. I mean, it would be one of the more abstract songs, I suppose, on Bon Iver, but mm-hmm. it would at least sort of fit with the ethos
right.
there. And I also like the comparison between 715 Creeks, or I guess CR Sigma Sigma KS. I don't know what to call these songs.
Yeah.
I mean,
you just try to read them as close to English
yeah,
as you
yeah,
can.
As close to English. So I think I agree. It's I really like that one. It might be my favorite on the album, and it's really short. Every time I listen to it, it ends before I'm expecting it to. But
the album or the song?
The song.
Okay.
The song. I mean, that's true of the album too.
Right.
But
this
the
is
song
a breezy 34 minutes.
It is
yeah.
a very short album. Yeah. But 715 Creeks, I think, is one of my favorite songs on the album, and a lot like Woods on the Blood Bank. It might be on the Blood Bank EP. I'm not sure.
That is exactly what
yeah,
it's on.
It's very simple, and there's not a whole lot
mm-hmm.
of instrumentation,
mm-hmm.
but it's really like a powerful, emotionally
mm-hmm.
driven song, even though there's not a whole lot beyond just Justin Vernon's voice and
right.
manipulation song
right.
and all that. Yeah.
Right. And so here we're seeing him just take the tools that he developed before and use them in a very interesting new kind of way. I just find this album so compelling, and I can't exactly put my hands around why.
No.
Do any of you guys like feel that tension where you're just like, this is so cool, but like, what am I looking
yeah,
at?
I think Caitlin and I were actually talking about this earlier. We were looking at some of the reviews of the album
mm-hmm.
from other publications, and they just weren't really, like, they kind of skirted around the subject
mm-hmm.
of what we're actually hearing.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, yeah, it's like, this is the technical production we've heard.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually created off of a new machine called the Messina, which is it was Justin Vernon and his sound engineer kind of manipulated a Prismer, which is like a form of auto-tune,
mm-hmm.
and kind of went off of this on their own way to create this weird machine. And yeah, I'm not really, like, it's its own thing. Like, it's literally created on something specifically tailored for this album,
mm-hmm.
for this sound, which I think is really interesting, and especially we see the spectrum of, like, what is and what has been Justin Vernon
mm-hmm.
and the band underneath it. I think, like, 10 Death Pressed Capital, six,
dice, four dice,
coming in at a short two minute 24 seconds. You hear kind of that Kanye kind of like rumble
mm-hmm.
to it almost that you heard off of My Dark Twisted Fantasy, which
mm-hmm.
I thought was interesting. But you see, like, I don't know, I'd be curious to hear the raw production of this,
mm-hmm.
I think, because this was all created with instruments.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was instruments put through this weird
right.
new synthesizer. So there's actually, like, these songs are, like, when you hear, like, what the hell is that? It's, like, actually a saxophone just
yeah.
contorted and, like, flipped on its head.
Right.
So I think I would love to see, like, the raw productions of this, or even how it's going to be performed live, and I think Bon Iver Live's a very interesting idea, and I expect a tour after this.
yeah,
I
definitely.
Demand a tour after this. But I think it's a really cool production in that way, and so there's really, at the bare bones, there are instruments underneath this.
Right.
It's just in an indescribable, technically never before done way, which I think is really cool.
Yeah, and I think so, using that, I think this album is probably the best example of Justin Vernon and Bon Iver's, like, meticulous approach to music,
mm-hmm.
because every little element that is in any of the songs is so carefully considered and put there very intentionally. I guess that's probably why I find it so compelling, because a lot of the things do not seem like they'd sound good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's all those weird moments in 33 God, that's this beautiful, like, amazing orchestral crazy thing, and then on top of it you get his, like, screaming, like, like, voice towards the end, and you're like, oh, that doesn't seem like it should fit in context with this just gorgeous, sweeping, like, huge chords. And maybe that's not unique, because we've heard that kind of thing done before, but here it feels exactly right. Like, he's gotten that balance between those two factors perfectly correct. So I think it's evidence of Justin Vernon and Bon Iver's ability to, I don't know, take something that exists and make it perfect and just perfect it. Like, Kanye West, I think, is, I find myself comparing them a lot. Kanye West is really good at creating something new that no one's ever heard before.
Mm-hmm.
And using that and being compelling in that way, and that like everything he does is just like so unique. Bon Iver kind of takes all those things that we've started to hear and like makes them perfect.
That's high praise.
I don't know. I think this album is so good.
I think to play devil's advocate off of you, this is the experience of my first listen. Mm-hmm. I'm more towards what you're saying now at this point, now mm-hmm. that I've given it a few times and really appreciate it. I really thought some of it was kind of just irritating noises the first time I heard it. And I see, like, I don't think the lyrical message has changed that much. Mm-hmm. I think the sporadic kind of riff-off lyrics you've heard, like, especially on Volcano Choir, which mm-hmm. was his in-between mm-hmm. project, Bon Iver of then and now, Volcano Choir, if you listen to the lyrics, you're like, that makes no sense. like, there's not a cohesive message, especially the song Comrade, which is just, like, there's, like, some Ticonderoga shit, and then he, like, says, like, that, and you're like, what the hell? But it's fine, but, like, these songs, especially, like, 22 over S, infinity, and which is 22 over soon, I'm just gonna say that. But, and things like that, you just hear, like, this is... all these sounds bother me, and then you're kind of just like, it's just at that weird pitch, and then I think realizing that they're trying to do that, and once you kind of accept that it's alien,
mm-hmm.
that's when I really enjoy it. But I agree with you that it is, acknowledging that it's intentional makes me enjoy it a lot more,
right.
And it's finely tuned in that way, and requires a lot of random production stuff that's really cool.
Yeah, I have a lot of specific thoughts about the lyricism here, but I want to ask you guys, but you, Caitlin and Michael, also, whether how you felt about the lyricism here and that random, weird nature of some of the things he's saying, like whether you found that compelling or just dumb. Ultimately.
Sure. I mean, I think it's definitely different from what he's done before. Mm-hmm. More that first album for Emma forever ago mm-hmm. was about the heartbreak, like breaking up of his band, breaking mm-hmm. up with his girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And this is kind of just that, even that very first song, 22 Over Soon, is just mm-hmm. that constant repetition of the, it might be over soon.
Mm-hmm.
And I think all of the songs shouldn't work together almost when mm-hmm. you would listen to them individually, but overall, as an album, I found it to be almost a weirdly smooth transition
mm-hmm.
between
mm-hmm.
it, and I feel like it did end up working together. Besides that, 715 Creeks, I feel like kind of... an abrupt ending almost
mm-hmm.
and transition to the next song, but other than that
hmm.
and I think there's almost some religious
definitely.
Sure. yeah and I don't know here if it's more talking about like today's world, like
mm-hmm.
almost more secular
mm-hmm.
or if it's more him being a more personal theme. But
what about you, Michael?
About the lyricism?
Sure.
Or
anything.
I think
themes.
Yeah, I like the theme you mentioned about kind of the contrast between this really, like, weird, like, alien experimental. And
mm-hmm.
I really liked the beginning of the album, 22
yeah.
Over Soon, or Infinity.
Correct.
I really liked that one because it begins with just this little, like, robotic mantra,
right.
It might be over soon. And then when his voice comes in, like, in the beginning of the song, it's so cool. It
yeah.
sounds so cool.
I think I was listening to that song at the end. I was just sitting at home, and I stood
yeah.
up. I was like,
yeah.
Like, you feel like you're in church. You're like, like, this
yeah.
is amazing.
No, it's really
all, like,
good.
This
yeah.
beaming spark right now.
It's just such a... Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, no, you're right. I agree. Yeah, in terms of lyricism, I mean, that's kind of a loaded question with
right.
Bon Iver, right? Because, I mean... on all of his albums, there's been, you know, stuff that you can hear
mm.
and other things that are really abstract
mm.
and getting into just, like, he's saying things and it's almost like, you know, the human voice is an instrument.
Right.
And that's kind of a theme with the whole Volcano Choir thing,
right.
too, you know. A lot of the music that he's done with that group, Justin Burns done with that group, sounds really cool, but
right.
it also just, when you think about it, you're like, what,
yeah, you
what
try
are you
to,
getting at with the words?
Right.
It sounds awesome,
mm.
but... I think, honestly, if there's one line that stuck out to me, it's the whole, it's at the end of 715 Creeks when he says, "Goddamn, turn around, you're my A-team," or something
mm.
like that. It's really, really charged, and the effects really work there, and
yeah.
it's just, like, such an emotional line. I'm not really sure
how
I feel about it still, but it really stuck out to me when I was listening to
yeah,
this album.
Yeah, I totally agree, and I think that the interesting thing about the lyrics here is how it kind of matches with the intentionality. But, like, my idea about how everything is super intentional here, most of the lyrics are kind of ignorable. Like, they're mostly there as placeholders, as, like, just kind of vaguely poetic type things. And so for most of the album, there's almost nothing that you can hold on to. Like there, like we said, there are no chorus, there aren't really strong choruses. Like nothing here you're going to sing like in a stadium somewhere and just be like pounding your fists because like you can understand the message and grasp it. And I think that's the point. There isn't really anything here to attach to except for in very short instances. Like that moment where you're like you talked to at the end of 715 Critics.
Right, yes, yeah.
Where you hear like a very specific phrase that is so charged and so like holding like so I don't know tacitile something that you could actually hold on to and be like, oh, this is what I'm looking at and this is what I'm like getting out of this album. And I think every once in a while, he kind of does that with some of the references he throws in. Like, in the song 33 God, the reference to, like, the Ace Hotel, which is, like, a location in L.A. that, like, a lot of artists go to. Like, that's something very specific that people are like, ah, hey, thing I can hold on to. Like, cool thing.
It's like hipster lifeline.
Exactly, really. Exactly. I think that the whole, this all comes back to our understanding of, like, the thematic point of this album. Because, like Caitlin, you mentioned, there is God here, and he's, I guess, trying to represent something divine and transcend, or at the very least, transcendent. And the thing about stuff that is transcendent is that there's nothing to hold on to because it doesn't exist on our plane.
Ooh, snaps.
Right? Just like, and so, like, there's nothing in this, right? In, like, the lyrics of this, there are very few things in the, like, whole lyric, in the lyric sheet of this album that you can just grab onto and be like, this is real. Mm-hmm. Everything is just ethereal and out there and cool.
Mm-hmm. I think he really gets that across the very last song, the five zeros.
Yeah.
Million.
They just call it million and something else I've listened to.
Oh, cool. Okay, perfect. Mm-hmm. And he just says, where the days have no numbers. So it is just kind of like.
Yeah, we're just like spirit figures.
Yeah.
He talks about, I read an interview with him that he was really into Taoism at one point, which I think, and like the whole numbers theology, I think, and kind of the naturalism of it is what he's into, especially considering his like previous work of like super nature-y stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But like riffing off of that on an aside, I think reading the lyrics like just straight is something I found really interesting and beneficial with previous Bon Iver albums,
right.
Especially Forever, Forever Ago, which is a lot more direct of an album than
right.
this. Like I'm not like definitely two very different works, but if you just take out their lyrics and just read them straight, I think you see way more of a narrative than
right.
you think to these. And granted, it is like one-off statements in a ton of them, and it leaves a lot of room for interpretation. But I think if you read, even like just go straight down the album, there is like a straight narrative to this.
Mm-hmm. Do you really?
I think so. I think like that it's not necessarily the most crazy of narratives. I think that's why I think it's similar to other
right.
albums in a way. And there's definitely a theological element, but
right.
I think you can interpret that in their other albums
right.
as well. But I think reading it straight, there is like a, I don't know, like the generic of idea of love lost, which is very vague and personal, so I think it's hard to really pin it down.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you will see a story in this as well that you can see in other works.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that it's not novel in its
right.
own way, but I think there is a message that's open to a lot of personal interpretation.
Right. So it's not like there is a narrative, but it's not like a Kendrick Lamar Good Kid, Mad City narrative.
Yeah, exactly.
Where it's like, I have a specific point, and I'm trying to paint this specific picture for you.
Yeah.
It's more just like broad brushes, like emotional narrative.
Yeah, which I think factors into the immersive quality of the music, like in lyrics and in sound, that these are more experiences than anything else, which I think is cool. And I think they've always tried to do, and I like that it's synthetic in a way now, as opposed to thinking of like the older works of these big like just rushes of sound and things like that, especially like the Volcano Choir stuff. I think, I don't know, like even the name Volcano Choir says it's kind of weird, like that's a joke.
Like, what is that?
Like nature, it's all in your face, just like that's and like I think that big immersive quality is it's just trying to like surround you in something no matter what it is, which I think is really cool. But I like that certain songs just broke that a little bit for its having fun with this cool instrument, particularly Eight Circle, which I think is just a cool, like, they just plugged in, like, the saxophone into it and just had kind of this battle back and forth between his lyrics and the saxophone and them taking back and forth. And it took me a while to figure out what that was, but I think it's really cool. And also, I like that kind of, I don't know how to break it up, but, like, maybe, like, second, like late second act, early third act of the album. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not sure if that's the right way that he would consider it, but
yeah.
towards that like last third of the album, mm-hmm. I really see it kind of returning to a little bit more of the originalism we talked about. Mm-hmm. Eight Circle as well, and the transitions there are clean, but you start to hear like. I hear a lot of individualism in the instruments being plugged right into this machine, and I think it's them kind of taking the different directions that this new idea could have.
What a great time. Luckily, with an album, even if it's trying to do something very ethereal and out there, we have things that we can hold on to in the form of tracks. This is a transition. This is what I'm doing.
Beautiful.
So I want to talk about just like specifically, quickly, what were you guys' favorite individual tracks on this album, or maybe not like necessarily favorite, because for me I'm still working through this. I don't know what my favorite tracks are, but just what are you finding compelling track wise on at that scale right now? Michael, you want to start?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think I've gone over some of this before. Mm-hmm. I really like, I think 22 Over Soon is mm-hmm. a really good opener.
Mm-hmm.
I really like the Creeks, Creek 715 Creeks.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the contrast with Eight Circle is also really cool. That there's
mm-hmm.
kind of like it's the most conventional grounded song in the
mm-hmm.
whole album, which is kind of I think it's cool that that's in there. So
mm-hmm.
I like it as a song. I also like it for you know kind of its place in the album as like kind of a callback to his earlier work
mm-hmm.
and a representation of the merging of that work and the new techniques that they brought into
mm-hmm.
the new
yeah.
album. So yeah.
Cool, Mike. What about you?
I am like looking over notes and other things, but trying to think about this. I talked a lot about I'm sure they call it 45, that song there, which I really liked as well.
_ 45 _
long _ slightly longer _.
Should we read into that? Oh, you know what it is? It's 4 and then 5.
Okay. Like that sounds good to me. I don't think I got that. But I think I like the transition between like 21 Moon Water and 8 Circle, especially
yeah.
like these songs, just like I didn't realize when one ended and the other started, which I thought was
mm-hmm.
really cool. I think again what I've said about the instrumentation, I also like, especially in 22 Over Soon, his willingness to kind of Kanye it up with samples.
Yeah. yeah,
like especially using voice samples, and I think in Million he uses this one Irish folk singer
mm-hmm.
and then he used Stevie Nicks, was it in one
yeah,
of the songs
at some point? Yeah,
yeah.
I think it's in Over Soon, right?
Cool, like I'm
yeah.
like yeah, I could get into like the slight hip hop undertones mm-hmm. of your influence in this album, and I know like your time hanging with Kanye in the last few years has probably done something like that for you, but I really like that it's no longer this folky band. And this is not really this is kind of a non-answer to what you're saying.
I think 5 of the 10 songs.
Yeah, I like 100% of this album is
yeah.
really good to me, but I really like 10 Death Breath Sides. It's
yeah.
hard to read, like
yeah.
honestly, but yeah, no, that cool, like, just, I don't know, that aggressive tone that you
yeah.
don't really hear in their music, which I think is different and exciting, and yeah, and that, and particularly 45, is like a cool, like, I don't know, just fun, and I like saxophone. I just generically like saxophones, so.
Cool. Caitlin, what about you? I know Mike took most of the songs.
He just
yeah.
did, yeah.
He did like 2 songs. Like 2.5, maybe. Like.
I agree with both of them that 22 Over Soon
yeah.
is just really, like, I think when you have a strong intro song, that just, like, really makes the whole album.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it also, like, gets you into this mindset where it's, it could be over soon, like, something bad
mm-hmm.
could be over soon, so that's for the best, but also something good could be over soon,
mm-hmm.
so you might as well, like, make the most of it in that moment, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Nice message.
yeah, and I also really like 8 Circle, even though it is more conventional. I think I found it more compelling because you can hear more of his voice on it.
Mm-hmm.
And 33 God, just because that really, like, transcendent
cool
sound. Yeah,
it is such
crazy.
A cool song.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not going to be that contrarian, because I really like 22 Over Soon. That's probably my favorite
mm-hmm.
song, like, actually on the album so far. It's just such a good opener.
It is.
So perfect. 33 God. I remember listening to that song when it came out, and I was just like, this is going to be great. I'm so excited for this. But one song that none of you have talked about that I really liked was the 29 Stratford Apartments, or
mm-hmm.
APTS. Which I think it's cool because it's another one of those like one-off references to something that's like real. I think that's a place he stayed in probably somewhere. I think he said it was in Barcelona or something, but don't quote me on that. I like that song because I actually think that's kind of the link from his older work to his new stuff now. Because that song, like, if you just like played it without anything on it, is a very conventional folk type song. I think it has a verse, it has choruses, and it's like a very Bon Iver song. Like, that song would have appeared on Bon Iver, and been like, yeah, this is great. This is exactly what it is. But the way that song is presented is that they took that song, they recorded it over the tape, and then there's tons of just, like, distortions within the song randomly. There's just moments where it kind of cuts out incompletely, and I was listening to this at work, and my computer at work kind of, like, isn't right exactly in how the headphones plug into the computer, and so I was like, oh, did they miss something? Like, something happened? Like, and I kept listening to it, and I was like, no, that is just how the song is. And I thought that was really cool and very interesting, and that's what I think is, like, the link between his other stuff. Like, because we know he can write amazing, beautiful folk pop songs, and this is something else, because once you add that layer to it, the song takes on a whole new character, whole new characteristics. So I wanted to ask whether, or let's kind of unpack a little bit how this album is different from everything else we've heard from them. Does anyone want to take that?
Sure.
Yes.
I'll jump right in there. way more effects driven. I think is a pretty baseline thing to say. Mm-hmm. I think that's pretty fair. I think you've lost almost any trace of acoustic guitar that, like, there's still, like, it's still existent and probably manipulated in ways I still haven't kind of, like, unpacked and figured out yet. But I think just that general quality of, like, this Wisconsin folk singer is not there. Like, I remember I actually saw them in 2011 on their last tour. Mm-hmm. And I remember their opening act was, like, some, like, borderline country, like, like, one man and a guitar kind of act. And it was just... I have no memory of who this was, unfortunately. But yeah, I think just kind of how you describe the band is a lot different now. You're just like, I think you've kind of lost that genre pigeonhole quality that might, not necessarily, because I think they're still a pretty rich band without this album, but I think that's pretty interesting in a way. You've definitely stepped up, I think, in the direction of Woods, but also that eerie randomness that they've had is still present in the album. Just, I don't know, I'm very curious of how this is going to be performed live. Mm. And I hope that's a good thing as opposed to a bad thing. But yeah, I think most of the qualities are still there. Just, I want someone to jump in because I'm, like, losing my trail.
Well, do you guys agree? Do you agree?
Let's see. I think one interesting thing about Bon Iver is, you know, with Justin Vernon's collaboration with Kanye West over the years, it's really become a band that kind of transcends genre, and people have written about this before, but I think genre as we've understood it conventionally is starting to break down, so now it's a lot harder to say, oh, that's definitely pop, that's folk music, that's hip-hop. They're all, you know, borrowing and learning and collaborating with each other, and I think that, you know, that now the new tone of Bon Iver is really starting to reflect that. Honestly, I think you can draw a pretty decent comparison between this album and Yeezus, right? The most the Kanye one, which Justin Vernon is also on.
Yeah,
in,
correct.
You know, a more limited capacity, perhaps, than on Dark Twisted Fantasy. Right. But, I mean, I think insofar as it's a shorter album, it's more effects-driven, and there's definitely kind of an emotional concept to it that's harder to shake out, but it's still there. I mean, there's been a lot of think pieces written about Yeezus as Kanye trying to, like, reconcile his crazy life with, like, new responsibilities of being a father and all that, and I think you can...
I love Yeezus, but that's such a funny connection to make, like, this song about, like, holding my liquor is like, oh, like, I'm having anxieties about being a dad, like, ooh, weird.
I believe it, though.
It's like, oh, yeah, okay, great.
So, I mean, I think it's definitely a cool direction for the band, and but I think it's definitely a lot, like Mike said, it's a lot harder to pigeonhole them now, which I think is a good thing, and I think is definitely reflective of trends in, you know, the music industry that people have seen and written about.
What do you think, Caitlin?
I totally agree with all he just said. I think it does, in a way, for how different it is, it does connect to his old albums. For, I think originally what set him apart was his almost high, like, falsetto-y voice.
Yeah.
And even though that's auto-tuned a lot in this album, I think that's kind of a constant throughout. And I feel like that just, like, draws a connection with his old stuff. And I think just the fact that this is so different is they built that new machine, like you said, the Messina. Yeah.
So
and
cool.
Yeah, it's even just crazy how they, not only his voice, but also the saxophone, the other instruments all go into this. And I think that just really set this apart from his old sound so much.
Yeah, and what I think is interesting about all this is that I agree with all of you. This is different. It sounds different. It is different. But what they're doing is kind of similar. Because, like, when Forever, For Emma Forever Ago came out, everyone was kind of like, this is such an interesting way of doing folk music, because it's not like bluegrass where there's a very specific type story or talking about something very limited usually, but also like related to general like malaise about whatever's going on. In Bon Iver's early work, they just kind of took that malaise and expanded it, and they were like, anxiety! Blah, blah, blah. And there was like a specific story sometime, because like obviously Forever, Forever Ago is about someone named Emma. Like, it just is. Like,
actually, for there's an interesting
or maybe it isn't. Him
that he's like, Emma is more of a broad idea.
Yeah, well than, whatever. Like,
just
you
say
give, if you give it a name, it's a thing, right?
Like, that's true, though. That's fair.
And so there's something that they're there's something that they're pointing to and like pulling out and extrapolating from. Mm-hmm. And here they're still doing that in this album, in the last album too. Like, they're still exploring those broader themes that they were exploring at the beginning, but sort of now they've kind of just like totally done away with all of the conventions of songwriting before. Like, in Skinny Love, like there's, like we keep saying, there's a voice, there's a chorus, there's something you can sing. There just isn't that here, but they're still kind of getting to the same points often. I don't know if it's universally true, but I think that's...
Yeah, no, I mean, I think for Emma Forever Ago, you're right, there isn't an explicit story. It's mm-hmm. a lot of exploration of general themes about, mm-hmm. you know, the band breaking up, his relationship breaking up. I think he had, like, mono, too,
yeah,
or something
yeah.
like that. yeah, no, it's definitely a very generalized album, but also, at the same time, for Emma, Skinny Love is a song that's been covered by, like, a bunch of different,
right.
you know, musicians
yeah.
from a bunch of different genres,
and
you're not going to
it's
see,
it's a good
like,
song with,
yeah.
like, a through line.
It is, but
point.
You're not going to see, like, a cover by some British, like, aspiring, you know,
there's not going to be a Bernie cover
no,
of
no,
a million.
No,
yeah, no, definitely.
Yeah.
So
shots fired at Bernie.
I mean, like Bernie's fine. She's got
Bernie's
a great voice.
Fine, yeah.
So do you guys like this better? I think that's a question we can ask.
I'm a big fan of, I'd say... Forever Ago mm-hmm. was my favorite of their work.
Yeah.
I was a little tired of it in the self-titled album. I think that's where all the names are after places. Like,
correct.
And it's cool. Like, I'm like in support of them, like whatever they're doing, because I still think they're making cool music.
Mm-hmm.
I think I was really ready for something different because
mm-hmm.
if something that's so undefinable, once you hear it, and unless it's really diverse, you kind of get lost. Like, you know, it's very hard unless you're on Forever, Forever Ago.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in the second album, it's hard to be like, oh, yeah, that's this song with this name, and I immediately recognize it as this.
Right.
Like, Skinny Love, you know it's Skinny Love. Wolves, you know it's Wolves. On the second album, they all just have a non-sequitur name. And, like, I'm sure, like, it's the experience is based on what he heard and what
right.
he believed about it. But at the same time, you can't really pin it down. And so the song, it kind of gets lost in the same sound. And then you get tired of that sound. So
yeah.
I think this is a cool, cool new thing.
Yeah.
And I think it's right what they needed to shake it up. Because if they release another album of the same kind of stuff, of just like an experiential, of acoustic, like emotional stuff, I wouldn't have paid it much mind.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm like, oh, this is them making an identical
would
album.
Would have
gotten yeah.
tired.
Which is okay. I'm saying they're still doing something new in their old works.
Mm-hmm.
But they can't sustain just that same confusion on the same note for so long,
mm.
I guess, if that makes sense.
Yeah. No, that makes perfect sense.
Mm-hmm.
What about you guys? What do you think?
Why don't you go first?
Sure. I feel like, personally, like, I was a big fan of the past two albums,
mm-hmm.
so, and I think every time you listen to a new album, it's hard to say that it's better,
mm.
like, right away, initially, so.
Yeah, maybe we shouldn't even be comparing.
Yeah,
that, but.
Exactly. But I feel like it is just, like Mike said, so refreshing. Like, if they had put out the same stuff, it just wouldn't have gotten that much attention, and
yeah.
I wouldn't have paid it that much mind. But at this point, it's hard for me to say what is better, because I'm so familiar with their old stuff, and this is just so new, but definitely refreshing, and I definitely like it.
Mm.
I think conceptually I really like that they did this,
mm.
because I really enjoyed the first two albums,
mm.
but I think it's very easy to see a different, you know, story in which Bon Iver sees that the second album really kind of helps cement them in their genre. They're like, you know, like Mike said, emotive, you know, folk, kind of more conventional music.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just stay on that road. Like I guess this is a weird analogy, but the Black Keys, right?
Sure.
You know, they found one album with a formula that really works, and
yeah.
they just make the same
one,
like, four
times.
They're
just going to make gold on the ceiling
yeah.
over and over
exactly,
and over again.
Exactly. And, like, a lot of people would like that.
Yeah.
And I have friends who have heard this album and said, you know, I wish it was more like
right.
the other ones.
Yeah.
Because
people
the
who
like
the first album
accessible.
Might
yeah.
not like this.
Yeah, exactly. But I kind of like the commitment to,
mm-hmm.
you know, like willingness to challenge oneself
right.
as an artist, as a band. I know in 2012, I'm reading from an interview here, but Justin Vernon said that I look at Bon Iver's music as like a faucet. I have to turn it off and walk away from it because so much of how music come together is subconscious or discovering.
Right.
And right now there's so much attention on the band, it can be distracting at times.
Right.
So I think I really like that there. It seems like in the creative process for this album, there was a conscious decision to not necessarily do what was popular or what would
right.
sell. It was like a conscious decision to do something new and push the band's
yeah.
frontier somewhere forward down the road.
Yeah.
I just definitely agree with that. You can tell he's totally not doing this to for his same fans, which I'm sure he knows and he appreciates them, but
yeah.
this was their experience. Like, they did this because they wanted to,
yeah.
and it just made me think, in high school, one of my best friends, she was really good at art, and I would just be like, I don't even, like, understand what this means and stuff, and she would just be like, Caitlin, like, art doesn't have to have a meaning behind it, and I just feel that this
oh.
album...
Spoken like an art.
Yeah. And I just feel like this album really just...
It commits to
yeah,
it.
Yeah. They just did what they wanted to do, and I just really respect their decision just to...
Yeah.
I think there's an interesting question of audience now that you bring that
yeah.
up.
Yeah.
Like, is there going to be a net loss or gain in listeners, I guess? I think, like, there's nothing to, like... Nothing to, for me to really, like,
this
there's no way to measure it.
This isn't a very marketable album.
No, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, is this going to get radio traction, like,
yeah.
Skinny Love, and, like, every person in the radio is going to be like, oh, my God, this is on, turn it up. Like, like, I think that's a really interesting that,
yeah, 21 Moonwater, let's
yeah.
go. Like,
I don't know, the poor intern at some radio station figuring out to find the character to punch that in properly is going to be my favorite thing. Some kid, like, God damn it, there's no upside down teeth.
There's some diamonds. How do I do it? Yes.
So, yeah, I think this is... I'm curious with the balance between people who are expecting another, like, unique indie folk album versus this, and what is that going to be? I see it as a general transition in music towards a... I agree. Like, I think Mike mentioned this earlier. That the
Michael.
Show, so, oh, yeah. Damn.
You're Mike.
I am Mike. This is Michael. Reestablishing the connection.
Correct.
But I think you said that...
You are forgiven.
Perfect. Thank you. So, like, what you're saying of the genre bending and things like that there's kind of been such a fusion, and I think a lot of performers across so many genres have been that. Like, particularly, I think, like, people in the, like, limelight right now are, like, Chance... Kendrick Lamar, Kanye is kind of whatever his next album is 20 years from now. And, like, I think you've kind of emphasized these different themes of these different artists just bringing in whatever and making it
mm-hmm.
really cool. And, like, I don't know, I am tired of a lot of bands who are like, this is our genre and this is what we play.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not as interested in that as this. And I think this is why, even though it's not getting radio traction as much, I think this is why people consider it the forefront of music.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and this is that is the point that I think is most important for me, because this album cements Bon Iver as one of the best bands of our era. Just because what they're able to they're so clearly able to do so many different things. Like, they can make just really accessible and also strikingly beautiful pop music that's like has an interesting purpose to it and also is like achieving something higher than just a pop song that gets tons of traction. And they can also do this weird, awesome thing. And that's something that I knew was possible because I've listened to Volcano Choir, I've listened to Justin Vernon on Kanye West. And for me, like, the release of this album just makes me confident that I can say, like, Bon Iver is one of the best bands of our time. They just are.
I think that's...
That's the
like,
point,
that's
right?
That's the point.
They just
like,
are.
Even
they're
like,
so good.
Yeah.
I think a one-trick pony artist can't really exist if they want to reach high success. Like, they
mm-hmm.
can only go so far. Like, I don't think Bruce Springsteen would have any traction if he came out, like, a year ago and started trying to make his music.
Yeah.
And I'm saying that's... Obviously, there's a lot of factors that I'm not considering right now. But meaning, like, if you wanted to do a straight performer, like, yes, this is what we do, I don't think that a punk band can really come up to its theme right now. I don't
yeah.
think there's... a genre right now that is like the genre. And even you see a lot of pop stars fading, like Taylor Swift, Katy Perry, like these just like, I'm just going to call them the generic radio pop stars.
Sure.
But I don't think, you don't really, like they've kind of faded. I'm sure they'll bounce back around whenever album comes, whatever. But I'm saying there's not that much diversity, and that's why everyone's like, not like, this is what we want,
right,
and this is what's coming up and cool, and I'm excited to see what this inspires.
What an interesting time in music.
Mm-hmm. You know what I'm weirdly reminded of?
What are you weirdly reminded of?
Radiohead.
Why is
that? You know, because they were very successful in the late 90s as a more conventional, you know, punk rock.
Like alternative rock when alt rock was a thing.
Yeah, exactly. That kind of band. And, you know, they'd release an album that, you know, was conventional, had some, like, real bangers. Tony Blair is a terrible prime minister. And then they could have just kept doing that, but then they were like, no, we're not going to do that. And they made Kid A, which was just this weird, but I mean, it got like a perfect 10 on Pitchfork or something.
Because it's like, it's a great album.
Yeah.
It is a really good album.
Yeah, that's what I'm reminded of, in a sense, though. I don't think Bon Iver is, or Justin Vernon is quite as like obnoxious as Thom Yorke can be sometimes. that's another discussion entirely.
Yeah, and unfortunately, we're going to have to cut our conversation there. This has been so fun. Thank you guys so much. And thank you, our listeners, for listening to the Untitled Leisure Project. If you like us, subscribe to the Voice Podcast Network on iTunes, Google Play, or whatever your preferred podcast delivery app is. Once you do that, you'll have immediate access to new episodes of the Untitled Leisure Project and the other excellent podcasts we produce at The Voice, like the 250 Taste Test and the Sports Sermon. Also, Mike eventually is going to release a Mysteries of History podcast.
Mysteries of History Power Hour with Mike and Megan. No, we're still debating the title. That is our working title. It is a lot of fun to say. So probably will happen.
So much fun to say.
We'll see.
So
episodes coming soon.
All of that will... you'll be able to find that easiest if you subscribe to the Voice Podcast Network. And you can find more content from all of us and everyone else on The Voice in our print magazine, which you can pick up on stands around campus, and on our beautiful website, www.georgetownvoice.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at GTownVoice and HalftimeGU for frequent updates about campus happenings and all that you need to know. And if you happen to like any of us in particular, you can follow us on Twitter. You can find me at drvarg01, Mike at mbergen95, and Caitlin at c_mannering, MANNERING. Michael does not have a Twitter as of now, but perhaps the feedback from all of you from this episode might encourage him to make one soon. In the meantime, send us your thoughts on the show and ideas for next one. So the theme music for the Untitled Leisure Project is by Ben Sound. You can find it at other royalty-free music at www.bensound.com. That is the end of the credits. That's it. We'll be back next week. Thanks so much for listening. And thank you guys for joining.
Thank you, Daniel.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, see you next week.